Welcome, everybody, to Lost Rhetoric. I am your host, Jason Dingus. Thank you for joining me once again in the realm of the weird. I really appreciate it. It's a bit icy out. We got a lot of snow. We got a lot of ice in the Portland area in the last day or two. I'm really enjoying it. The windows are nice and frosty. They look great. It looks like a professional window frost job all over the house. And I couldn't be happier about it. So, what did we do last week? Oh, yeah. Tamara Rollins was here. That's right. And we talked about Oumuamua, the turd-shaped intergalactic object that was found in our neighborhood. And we don't know what it is. We did a whole episode about it. We talked about Tamara's theories about what it is, where it came from, what it's made of. And if you didn't listen to it, go back, give it a listen, episode 34. It was a really good time. And if you listened to it or are going to listen to it, leave a rating or a review or both on Apple Podcasts. I've gotten a couple new ratings, so thank you to whoever left them. New reviews are hard to come by. So if you would like to leave one, please feel free. I would love to hear from you. So some social media updates. I deleted my Facebook account. I deleted my personal account, which in turn deletes the Lost Rhetoric page. And I was just bored with it. I thought it was pretty boring and dumb, and I didn't want to do it in the first place, but I did. I thought it was the right thing to do for the show. But 7-8 months of doing this and almost zero engagement from people, and I don't like Facebook either, so I just got rid of it. So sorry to the two or three people that actually paid attention to the Lost Rhetoric page, but it's just wasn't worth my time and effort. I did not like logging on to Facebook every day just to check and post whatever the fuck. So follow me on Instagram. That's all I got. Find me at Lost Rhetoric Podcast. Follow the page and like what I post. I would really appreciate it. Other than that, you can email me lostrhetoricpodcast@gmail.com. So I got this new idea. I actually posted it on Instagram last night. If, you feel so inclined, I would really enjoy to field some questions from the listeners, questions about anything. I don't care what the topic is. It could be for advice. It could be something about the show. It could be something totally unrelated to the show. But, if people actually write and ask me some questions, I'll pick one a week, maybe two, I don't know. And I'll answer it in the intro. I think that'd be really fun to engage with the listeners because, in my experience so far, it seems people are listening, but when I ask the listener to engage in any sort of way or write or participate, no one really does anything. So I'm starting to wonder if you're real. Are the numbers that I'm seeing, are they robots? Or are the listeners real? I don't know. So I would love to actually hear from you this time. And I'm asking, I'm calling out to you. Will you answer the bell? Will you answer the call? Will you write me some questions for me to answer? I would love to hear from you. I would love to do this every week. I would love to answer a question from a listener every week. I think that'd be really fun. So if you want to, write me a question on Instagram or LostRhetoricPodcast@gmail.com. That would be super, super fun. So that being said, let's get into the top five. Let's do what we always do. Who listened to episode 34, Fear of a Turd Planet, with Tamara Rollins the most? Got a huge shakeup, folks. Hold on to your seats. Coming in at number five, brand new to the top five, Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you, Charlotte. I have to say, growing up, I was a huge Larry Johnson fan. I had his jersey. I had his shoes. I'm more of an Atlanta Hawks fan, but I really liked Larry Johnson. And I'm sure you do too. So thank you, Charlotte. Number four, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. That makes sense. That's where Tamer lives. I hope it wasn't just Tamer listening in multiple locations, racking up the numbers. I hope some of his friends actually listened as well. So thank you, Truth or Consequences. Number three, Happy Valley, Oregon. You're back. You're officially back. It's been a long time, but the last couple weeks, you've been back in the top five. Now you're back in the top three. So thank you, Happy Valley, for showing up. Number two, and I think also new to the top five, Austin, Texas. I've been trying to reach out to you for this for the whole time. And you're finally here, Austin. You're listening. And I really appreciate you listening. Keep it up. And number one, no surprise, Portland, Oregon. Thank you as always, Portland. I really appreciate it. Shout out real quick to Winchester, Virginia. First time not in the top five. And to Tiger, Oregon as well. Not in the top five or top three. You came close, but didn't make it. And also to St. Paul, Minnesota. Just missed it. And you've been a staple. So I just really got to say thank you to you three for coming close. You came close. So what am I listening to this week? Some old stuff, some kind of new stuff. I watched this documentary the other day and it had Bill Withers in it. And I started listening to some Bill Withers. It got me on a Bill Withers kick. If you don't know who Bill Withers is, sorry, I'm not going to explain him to you. It's Bill fucking Withers. Listen to him. Jacques Brel. Once again, if you don't know who he is, I'm not going to explain too much. He's a French crooner. He's like the French guy. He's the French singer. He's the only one. He could be the only one, and it would be enough. He's that good. So I was listening to a lot of Jacques Brel. Then, in some weird, strange, I guess, coincidence, right after I stopped listening to Jacques Brel, I came across this random record on Instagram that this record shop that I follow posted about. And I was like, oh, who the fuck is this guy? I'm going to listen to this guy. That record looks interesting. And it's this guy, Charlie Magira. That's M-E-G-I-R-A. And I cut it on, this album from 2019. It's a collection of his songs that came out in 2019 called Tomorrow's Gone on Numero Group. And the first song, I shit you not, kind of sounded like Jacques Brel. I think he's singing in French. I didn't confirm that by researching it or anything. But his voice kind of reminded me of Jacques Brel, and he was singing in French. And I thought that was a real fun quinky-dink there, because it wasn't intentional. I wasn't looking for people that sounded like him, and then I just kind of stumbled across him. But there's so much more to this guy, Charlie Magira. I started listening to the record in its entirety, and the first however many, five, six songs are really fuzzed out, reverb heavy, like Link Wray style guitar, heavy on the surf vibes, 50s rock and roll. And like I said, the first song and one of the third or fourth or something, I think he's singing in French. I'm not really sure. And some of it's instrumental, and I'm like, what the fuck is this dude's deal? This is pretty cool stuff. I was into it, not super into it, you know, but I was into it enough, and I just kept listening. And then out of nowhere, 80s kind of new wave, dark wave music started coming out, and it was really good. It was kind of, you know, Joy Division vibes, and then kind of like the New Order vibes, like kind of the more poppier vibes as well. But I could also feel some of the somber beauty in the guitar work that The Cure has, you know? And then I could hear some like Johnny Marr Smith's influence, but it was kind of this nice, I don't know, like collection of 80s sounds and influences for a few songs, and it was really good. And then, boom, out of nowhere, garage rock. Like, really awesome, distorted garage rock, energetic, where he's screaming in the chorus, and I'm like, what the fuck is this dude's deal? He keeps switching genres completely, but just absolutely killing it every time. And I was looking at the track listing, and it seems like he does a lot of collaborations with different groups and people, so it must affect his sound, and he just kind of goes along with whatever he's working, or whoever he's working with, and just creating whatever the fuck he wants, man. But there's a mystery behind this guy. I guess he was mysterious when he was alive, because, spoiler alert, I guess he's dead now, but he was born in the early 70s in Tel Aviv, and there's just not much known about the guy. He was just releasing these great songs and these great, I guess, albums that, I don't really know. People don't seem to know too much about him, but apparently he died a few years ago, and they found him with his guitar thrown, like, stuck in an amp, and it was on, just causing all sorts of crazy feedback. And the story is just too good to be true. If you're a fucking music fan or a musician, like, did that really happen? Was this guy this mysterious and he really died under those circumstances? Cause that's just like the coolest shit ever. Am I wrong? But I haven't confirmed one way or another if he is absolutely dead or who the fuck this guy is. But his music is super interesting. And this collection, Tomorrow's Gone, is a good place to start. I think they're still collecting all of his music and putting it out. But anyway, check out Charlie Magiera. Fun, interesting stuff. Got me all riled up, you know. It was really cool. So yeah, that's what I've been listening to. And you can find songs from Bill Withers, Jacques Brel, Charlie Magiera on your own, but I'm going to post, or I'm going to create a Spotify playlist with some of their songs, probably a few each. And you can listen on Spotify if you want. You can just search LR035 and it'll pull up. It's collaborative. So if you want to add any songs that I didn't put on by these artists or similar artists, feel free. I would love to hear that. And any suggestions you got. And thank you to the people who have added to past playlists. I noticed, so I appreciate that. Moving on to the exhumed excerpts from the Tomb of the Promulgated. What do I got this week? Well, it's the APRO Bulletin again from September 1987. This could be the last episode of the APRO, the last issue of the APRO Bulletin. I'm not exactly sure, but it is certainly the last issue in the archives that I find online. So let's get started with the headline, Triangle Over California. Bakersfield, July 12th, 1986. Andy Hoyt was driving east on Highway 178, about 15 miles northeast of Bakersfield, with his sister Lisa and her 16-year-old son Joey in the early morning hours. They pulled over for a brief rest, and Hoyt saw, quote, three red lights and a dark image behind them like an upside-down triangle. Hoyt grabbed his camera and managed to take two or three pictures before the object disappeared over a hill. Then a pair of explosions, quote, lit up the sky like it was daylight out. After reporting the explosions on an emergency roadside phone, the party continued to its destination. The next headline is, photos claimed missing. A call to Edwards Air Force Base upon returning home brought a sudden response from the Air Force, Hoyt said. The next day, Air Force officers took Hoyt and his sister and nephew to a command post a few miles from the crash site. After developing the film in Hoyt's camera, the Air Force returned two sets of prints of the family camping trip, minus the frames that could have shown the descending aircraft. Defense experts said Hoyt's description of what he saw fits the most educated guesses of the configuration of the top secret F-19 stealth fighter, a plane the Air Force will not confirm even exists. The Air Force sealed off a large area around the crash site and would only confirm that a plane crashed killing the pilot. Well, it just goes to show, folks, don't give your film to the Air Force. Don't let them develop your film, because you're not going to get it all back. Talked about it many times before. They're either hiding a UFO or a top secret aircraft that they are working on, possibly the F-19. Who knows? We'll never know, because they didn't give Hoyt his film back. So you fucked up. You done fucked up, Andy Hoyt. We could have all known if you just would have taken the film somewhere else other than the Air Force Ritz fucking camera. All right, folks, let's move on to the last little excerpt here, titled Mysterious Encounter Over West Virginia. All official sources, it seems, are denying any relationship with an object encountered by flight number 1083 of the Delta Airlines fleet while flying between Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania and Atlanta, Georgia at 29,500 feet on Thursday morning, June 27th, 1987. The National Weather Service, quote, doubts, unquote, it was theirs. The Federal Aviation Administration could only say that no one is likely to find the object. The pilot of the airplane said that an object, quote, which appeared to be a missile, seemed headed straight for the Boeing 737 before passing to the side and slightly below. The next little headline is Midget with Fins. And this little paragraph continues. The pilot described the object as a rocket or missile about 4 feet long with fins that were each about a foot or a foot and a half in height, said Bill Berry, a spokesman for Delta. Kathleen Bergen of the FAA's regional officials in New York said that it could have been a, quote, blimp-shaped balloon. The jet, which carried 80 passengers, was 31 miles northeast of Charleston when the incident took place. And the last little paragraph is titled High Speed, comma, No Exhaust. The pilot further said that the object was heading north at a high rate of speed and he could detect no exhaust. The National Weather Service pointed out that the jet stream, a fast current of air at high altitudes, was not crossing West Virginia at the time of the encounter, and wind in the area was not strong enough to make an unpowered object such as a balloon move at high speed. Investigators learned, however, that the time for Thursday's regular weather balloon launch was just 25 minutes before the encounter, and the nearest station which sends up such balloons is just 50 miles west of Charleston. This information came from a meteorologist at the National Weather Service. The Pentagon spokesman, one Major Larry Eisenagle, said that he could only say that, quote, the Defense Department had nothing going on yesterday that would have anything to do with that. We've had several clippings on this case, but the most detail was from the San Francisco Chronicle for June 27. Further information will be gratefully received. I'm not sure if they ever got any more information, but those are the two exhumed excerpts from the Tomb of the Promulgated. I hope you enjoyed them. I wonder what that object was outside of the plane. We'll never know. We'll never know. It was a midget with fins. That's all we know. All right. A little update before we get into tonight's episode. A couple weeks ago, I did the episode on the Hotel Cecil with Stuntman Mike. And in that, we talked about the Elisa Lam disappearance and how the Netflix documentary was coming out on the 10th of February. So that came out and I watched it, and I'm not going to spoil anything for you guys, but it definitely revealed a lot more information than we talked about on the podcast episode. And I kind of feel like I know what happened now. I kind of feel like there's closure, because there was some information that wasn't known that they talked about, which is pretty crucial information. So just watch it. If you have Netflix, watch the 4-part series on Elisa Lam. It's very much worth your time. But I do have to say, Stuntman Mike and I did talk about some things that they didn't talk about in the documentary. Maybe they weren't worth talking about, but they certainly were entertaining for us. So go back and listen to that episode about Hotel Cecil. I think it's episode 33. And give it a listen and watch the documentary. It's pretty good. So tonight, my guest is Cody Kluwen. I haven't talked to him yet. I don't know how it's going to go. But I do know we're going to talk about synthetic psychedelics. We're going to be talking about psychedelics in general. We're going to talk about his experience with them, how they've affected his life. And, we're going to, every psychedelic episode, I like to kind of get into what it means to the person that's using them and what they think are the possibilities of being on psychedelics. Where do you go? What is the reality? Is it reality? You know what I mean? Like, are you tapping into something that you just can't see on a day-to-day basis? Is it always there, or is it all delusions? I don't know. So I know we're going to get into that amongst a whole bunch of other shit. So here it is, man. I hope it goes well. Wish me luck. Here's me and Cody. I don't know. We did it though. We somehow figured out how to talk to each other.
We cut some corners. We did it.
Well, we did it, and you're here, and we're live, and that's all I can say.
Oh my God.
It's funny saying we're live on a podcast, because I can do whatever I want to this thing. Like, you know,
they would never know.
No one will ever know. But tonight, my guest, Cody Kluwen, thank you for being here with me.
Yes, this is great. This is an honor.
Oh, well, I appreciate you saying that. We've been talking about doing this for a while. And the topic that we're going to attack tonight, that's so aggressive. Yeah. I don't want to say attack.
Graze over.
We're going to graze over. Yeah, that's a real Midwestern thing for you to say.
But, well, I'm from the Midwest, so.
There it is. But, you know, we're going to talk about psychedelics, man.
We're going to talk about psychedelics and how weird they are.
They are weird.
And if you're talking to me.
If you're talking, yeah, because I've approached this subject once in my ayahuasca episode with my good friend Andy Barden, and that's still one of my favorite episode. I loved that conversation that I had with Andy.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah, thank you.
That was a good one.
Yeah, his experiences with that. And that's completely different. Well, not completely different, but it's different than what we're going to talk about tonight, because
his is like a transformation health-wise, and mine is more about just the bizarre interconnectings with coincidental values, and Jesus Christ, it gets nuts.
yeah man, because we're going to be talking a lot about your experiences, especially as a young I don't want to say fuck up. I don't think you were ever, maybe you think you were a fuck up, but it doesn't seem like you were really fucking up too much. Not any more than anyone else, I guess.
Yeah, no, but, I was unique, and I struggled when I'm dealing with people and I felt like an outcast, you know, mostly. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard to dig myself out of the hole, which I basically kind of put myself into, you know,
right,
mentally.
Yeah, man. And you, all right, so you wrote a book about your, I guess, yeah, it's basically your life. It focuses a lot on your post high school years, I'd say. What would you say the age range it focuses the most on?
Around 15, 16 on
until about the time you moved to Portland in around 2009, when you were how old?
It's about 24. Okay. When I moved here.
All right. So that's a good almost decade that you cover in the book. And you obviously go into your childhood. But that's not the focus, you know. And the book, the title, I don't know if it's a finished title, but it's Somewhere Along the Enchanted Highway.
Yes, that right. That is going to be the name for sure.
For sure.
When it comes out.
When it comes out. Yeah. Yeah. But I enjoyed reading it because I always enjoy reading about my friends, especially in a situation, a life that I didn't live, and experiences I didn't have, and doing yeah. things that I didn't do, which you certainly did.
Yeah, I did a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah, because before we get into that, because we get into a lot of your usage of synthetic psychedelics, which I honestly didn't really know existed as when I was that age. When I was a kid, you know, in my late teens, early 20s, I didn't know really anything about that shit.
That is partially why I wanted to do this story. It's, mm-hmm. it's a very unique situation. You know, some kids basically get their hands on some very strong psychedelics that were actually legal at the time. And since we were all kind of outcasts in Dickinson, North Dakota, and we're very secluded. I mean, it's, I can't even think of a more secluded place besides somewhere in Wyoming, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very far away to any metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. But, you know, our town wasn't a teeny tiny town. It was, you know, 20,000 people, but still it was very enveloping and it was very hard to express yourself within that kind of community, you know what I mean?
Right. And how big is the town?
So around 20,000.
20,000. Yeah, my hometown in Virginia is it's close to 30,000. Close. Yeah,
it actually is now, or it was around 30,000 due to the oil rigs. So like when I left, wow. It was 20,000 and it boosted up. It actually had some of the highest prices in rent. It had New York prices. It was crazy. Jesus.
Crazy. Well, it seems like our hometowns are about the same size, and there's a small university in your hometown and there's a small university in my hometown as well. But you know, I mean, where I'm from is like, I'm fucking 70 miles from DC. I'm an hour and a half from Baltimore. I'm like 2 hours from Richmond. You know, I'm like close to fucking everything, I guess. But where you're from, quite literally the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it's so far. I mean, you guys.
It's amazing that many people live there, actually. I'm actually astonished that the population is that high.
Yeah. Well, you know, Fargo's not too far away. Fargo's, you know, if you want to count that as a metropolitan area. But basically everything else is Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. That's about 8-10 hours. It's about 8-10 hours to Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And what, Winnipeg, Canada, you know, it's like, there's nothing,
nothing.
Yeah. You go the other way and it's Missoula, and that's not a really big town either. So
lovely places. All of them. I've been to all of them. They're all great, but they're so far away. But
they are.
Growing up there, I assume you get bored, and you know, we're going to get into how this all led to what it is you are doing now.
Yeah.
Which is similar, but it's all a process, right? You know,
it all seems to tie together. You know, you can't really take out one and add in a different thing. It all just kind of, it works together somehow, which I'm still trying to figure out how.
Yeah, man. I mean, everything you do, everything you say, everything you do just leads you to where you are. You know what I mean? It's just, there's no separating you from yourself. So wherever the hell you are, you got there from everything you did previously.
Yes. And I think
that's how you react to it.
I think that's how it is for really everybody. It's just, I just find, I really can't think of too many people that have lived this particular type of situation. You know, it's, like, I don't know too many people that pulled out kind of the way that I managed to do so. And it's kind of alienating, you know, it's kind of like, what the fuck just happened? You know what?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, man. I mean, the book, it's, let's get into it a little bit, because you have a lot of experience with a lot of things that I know nothing about. And it's a lot of, it's like chemistry, you know, it's like shit, science, these drugs that it's like things I just don't understand, but you at least have a handle on them enough, even at a young age, to when you were approaching them, you knew how to be cautious, which I respect the shit out of that, because a lot of your friends are not very cautious and really went for it, but you at least would see what you had in front of you in a sense and take a smaller dose. And the one thing too about psychedelics that I don't know shit about, and I think a lot of people don't know about, but you seem to have a pretty firm grasp on at an early age, is how they work and how they are going to affect your brain and how to approach it, at least to understand what to expect. Am I wrong?
Yeah, try to be as safe as you can. And right. that was my focus. I was kind of the person kind of looking over people a lot of the time. And I have this issue where I take a very, very small amount and I basically tripping 2 to 3 hours past everybody else that took a regular dose.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about, you know, 1/4 to 1/3 of a dose. And I was very fortunate to discover that right off the bat. And I don't know whether that was just kind of being cautious or scared. I didn't really feel too scared the first time. It just was, I didn't know what to expect. It was also brand new. It was like, okay, here's 5-MeO-DIPT and it's called Foxy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was presented to me and it's, they're like, oh, these are, you know, it's $15 a dose. And so I was like, cool, well, I'll take one. And I right then and there, everybody else in the room took a full dose and I took a 1/3 of a dose. And it was fabulous. By the end of it, I was rolling around, you know, after the whole entire night, you know, of all these bizarre coincidences and situations, and just going through that first trip. I think that trip's in the book. That's the one where it's like, I basically looked over and I saw these dolls,
mm-hmm,
in a china cabinet. Because we were at everybody was sober besides us trippers, you know.
So, right.
And that was bizarre anyway, because usually a party has booze and, you know, it's North Dakota. I could not wrap my head around what this party was. And I knew these people. They were partiers.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a weird situation. It was just somebody's birthday. And we were there trying to keep our little dirty little secret. Keep our little try to hold it together,
right,
to be honest, you know.
Yeah.
And it was very hard. It was ridiculously hard, because there was dolls basically coming alive. and it's not with Foxy in particular, it's not like it's not a situation where you're actually hallucinating the dolls, you know, coming alive. It's that they have a feeling to them, and it's like everything is turning cartoon, but it's basically in that micro environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not like the walls are moving around and stuff like that, at least not for me. It was like I was hallucinating, but I wasn't seeing it with my eyes in particular.
Huh.
It's very, very hard,
right,
to explain. They were the dolls were playing though. They were playing and I was just mesmerized, you know, and I was enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I found comfort leaning on a corner of a wall basically. And that's when I was like, shit, this is this is something else. And I got up and started talking, and it's like nobody knew I was tripping my fucking balls off, even myself, you know. So it was so brand new. Meanwhile, my friend was in the corner, and the dolls got to him, but it got to him in a much, much more deep, concerning way. So we actually had to leave because of the dolls.
Wow. I mean, that's horror movie shit for some people, with with the dolls freak people out. But when things start coming to life, yeah, that's, you're fucking fucked up. And that would freak me out. But during this Foxy trip, there's like some, aside from the dolls, you mentioned that your buddy claimed that he could see the future in a sense, like
That was the second Foxy trip. You're talking about that first one. Yeah, that was very bizarre, because he saw, we basically started driving around, and it was just complete bliss. We were all just basically rolling. I kept on saying to myself, I never did ecstasy before this, and I really actually never got my hands on good stuff afterwards, never have tried it. But I kept on saying, this is ecstasy, this is what they talk about when people are rolling. And I was like, this, but also it seems to be really deep at the same time. So my friend was driving us around, and it felt like we were basically flying around, like in this Jeep Grand Cherokee. You know, it felt like we were just like 5-10 feet off the ground hovering.
Right.
And
dangerous.
Yeah. that part sounds
fun, but terrible.
Yeah, that person really wasn't all that dangerous, you know, as far as driving. Good. But he did, look over to this field, and he's explaining to me that he had a dream, except for there was like military vehicles in this area. And he's like, there's a cop there's going to be a cop over that hill. Can't see that far. Like I know, 'cause I've tested it, that the cop has been there before. I've seen him pull over somebody after this experience. And he just basically nailed it. It's like, there's a cop right over that fucking hill.
And there was.
And
wow.
And then I was starting to ask questions. It's just like, 'cause these guys have tripped, they've tried this stuff before. They kind of knew what they were doing in a sense. And I started asking questions. It started, it's like, well, how did you do that? And, what's going on? And he basically explained that sometimes these drugs amplify that part of your, brain. Nobody knows why. It just seems to happen with some of these psychedelics.
And that same experience was the one where he said there was a cop, and he knew there was going to be a cop, but he also had a dream about some military vehicles, but yes. they weren't there. But then all of a sudden they were, right?
You guys did
see some military vehicles after your friend said there should be military vehicles there. Yeah, right?
there is a disconnect there. It's so weird, and I can't even. It's just like they weren't there, and then they were. It's very bizarre. I can't even that part of the whole trip, I can barely explain. I had a really tough time explaining that in the book, and it's just we were fucked up. So.
Right.
Who knows, where our minds took us,
Right.
but you, for the most part, you could think really clear.
Right.
On it.
It seems like it, but it's like you were saying, where it takes you and what you're tapped into, that's the shit that really interests me with psychedelics, is because I kind of do believe that. I mean, I don't know if any psychedelic can do it, synthetic or otherwise, but if you're in the right headspace, you're in the right place and you're with the right people, you could tap in to whatever the fuck it is, like the oneness, like the all knowing, the past, yes, the future. And it seems like maybe your friend, because I don't know if I think these military vehicles and the stuff was like a dream of his that was like coming true, and he was telling you what was going to happen, and it was fucking happening.
That's what was kind of happening.
Yeah. So what the fuck? Where is this drug taking you? Where do you exist when you are on this shit? Is it real?
I don't know, but I'd love to.
What do you think?
I'd love to do it again if I got. If I had a scientist that had the, like, if I knew a scientist or a chemist that could make this perfectly and prove to me like this is it, you know, perfect. I did not botch this batch. This is perfect. And had people test it, I might try it again. Maybe. Man,
dude,
maybe.
I don't do this shit really. But if that scientist were to bestrew the powder, the perfect powder, all over the table and said, this is it, I'd snort it or I'd lick it. Oh, yeah. I wouldn't do it right then and there,
Don't snort it, because your dose, the dose kind of goes, you need a much smaller amount when you snort these.
That's right. You mentioned something about this in the book. Can you explain the difference between ingesting and snorting? Because I think our listeners, and by the way, if you're, I don't think we're condoning necessarily doing all of these things, but we're just telling the story of your experience. But I am also intrigued on how these things hit you and why they affect people in different ways. Because I think this is like the more you know situation. So the difference between snorting and ingesting is important.
Yes. And my group of people, you know, there's a website called arrowhead.org, and I recommend that anybody that's going to take a new substance to go through and read trip report after trip report after trip report, because And especially don't just look at the nice ones. Look at the bad ones. Look at the train wrecks, the disasters, because then you're going to know, okay, I want to be careful. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be careful. My group was careful in a sense, but they kind of knew what they were doing. And we kind of acted like scientists. We acted like we were doing, they're not acted. We were researching these drugs. We were actively researching. And I actually wanted to.
That's what it sounds like in the book. It's like you guys kept coming across new stuff.
It was a money thing for some, you know, some were making money doing it, importing this stuff from China or Canada. Mm-hmm. And, that, you know, they'd make their, you know, 10, 15 bucks a pop or whatever, cause they could probably get it for $1 a dose or whatever. So you're making kind of a good profit, but we're throwing huge raves and passing the shit out. There wasn't that many people that were interested in it. And our group did grow and grow and grow, but it was more about, you know, instead of like trying to get everybody to do it, which I wanted to, the group felt that we have to keep this a secret, but it's like Fight Club, you know, it just keeps on growing and growing and growing. And by the end of it, you know, we basically we had so many people, so many different people in this snowball going down the hill and tripping, everybody's tripping. And we had the old dinosaur people, you know, like the people that were there in the beginning, and then they had these new people, and then
the dinosaur late 20 year olds and 30 year olds.
Yeah, dinosaur.
Those are the ones.
I was so distracted at the time. I wanted to record. I mean, I actually did record some of it. I recorded a trip on like the tape, you know, I had a little tape recorder and I recorded some of that, but I wanted to document it. I wanted to write it all down, but I didn't write down a fucking thing. You know, I just never got to it. Never was a journal type of guy. So eventually, the reason I got the book done is because I've been going over it through my head so many times, many, many times, just reliving it and remembering it, because I knew when it was happening that I wanted to get this out there somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how this whole thing is kind of wrapping into itself, because now we are here and the book is being developed, and hopefully it will get into the hands of people that, like yourself, that don't know about this stuff, you know?
Yeah, man. Well, there are lessons to be learned from it, but we're going to get to some of those, but we still didn't get into the snorting versus ingesting thing.
Yeah. So, a good example of that would be, well, for me personally, that it was AMT. We thought it was straight up AMT, and it turns out, okay, so this is where it's dangerous. So,
okay, and what is AMT? Because this stuff is like Greek to me.
So I was stoked about the Foxy trip, right? And my friends were like, hey, there's not, we can't get Foxy anymore.
And Foxy's the 5 M-E-O-D-I-P-T.
That's correct, yes.
Which whatever the fuck that is.
Well, it's very complex, and I'm not a scientist or a chemist, so it's hard to explain all that stuff, and it goes on forever. Some people can explain that much better than I can.
Right.
But there is a huge, tremendous difference between 5-MeO AMT and regular AMT.
Okay.
And here's where it kind of gets complex, especially with the snorting.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had three people or two people with me. It was a party of three. And we wanted to try AMT. This is one of the new things that came into town. And Foxy, I mean,
that's another thing about the synthetic psychedelic. It's like there's all this new shit. I got this new shit.
Yeah, this is all brand new to me. You know, I knew about a few things.
And it was all legal, right?
Well, Foxy got illegalized. So the next thing was AMT. Somebody got some AMT in, and somebody else got some 5-MeO AMT.
Okay.
And we ended up with the 5-MeO AMT.
Okay.
Thinking it was AMT.
Okay. And they're drastically different?
As far as potency. So I've never done straight up AMT, and I would never do 5-MeO AMT ever again.
Right. Okay. So you didn't know you were doing it. And no,
this is a case where I was cautious.
Mm-hmm.
And so we split. I was cautious. I was already going a little bit past cautious, because
mm-hmm.
I was going to, I snorted a third of a dose,
mm-hmm.
and it was supposedly going to be AMT. So I figured, okay, that is, or no, it was actually, I think it was a little bit less than a third, because mm-hmm. I was trying to compensate. I knew that it was going to hit harder with the, with the snorting it. Well, it turns out it was 5-MeO-AMT, and I was basically at the point where I had to go run around the block. I totally lost my shit.
Mm-hmm.
My friends were losing their shit too. They were gone, and nothing was making sense. My heart was racing so bad. I got to go run around the block. And my other friend was losing his shit, but he was having this beautiful experience. It was, okay, you know, raining out. He like took off his shirt and he took off his shoes. And I'm like, I got to go change my clothes. I've got to go pour water over my fucking head. You know, I'm going to crawl around in these blankets.
That's just crazy activity.
Yeah.
If anyone's just watching what's going on.
Yeah, it was. Well, that's the thing is I actually called my friend. I was so desperate to just try to get a grip on it, on reality, because there was so many fractals within every conversation, which the conversations were not happening. They were just, it was like just nonsense. Mm-hmm. Nothing was making sense. And I could not handle that. And it could not handle how fast the drug felt. I couldn't handle just really anything about it. Nothing about it. Besides the first, because the Foxy brought me into this, like, okay, I want to learn about this shit. This stuff may have potential. Like all these drugs, these psychedelics. When I went to the bathroom right after I snorted, I was stoked because I looked into the wood grain,
mm-hmm,
of my shitty fucking, you know, plastic wood cabinet, and I was seeing the ball. I was looking in the wood, like mm-hmm, inside of it.
In the book you say that you, it was like superpowers, like you were zooming in like a microscope with your eyes.
I was zooming in and zooming out at will.
That's crazy.
So I was so stoked that first couple seconds. This is after like, oh my God, that fucking burned. And I'm like, hey, I think I feel a little lightheaded. I got to go to the bathroom really fast.
Snorted it and it kicked in pretty immediately.
Yeah, it was instant.
Instant. Okay.
It was stupid instant.
Ooh.
And it was not expected that, because the Foxy took, you know, an hour to 2 hours.
Right.
I guess I was told it was going to hit fast, but whoa. Oh yeah. My God. This was the, this is the bell of the ball.
Jeez. Yeah.
Yeah.
The bell end of the ball.
Yeah. I was terrified. And then I was like, okay, this isn't so bad. This is basic. Like, what can these drugs do? That's what I kept on saying to myself. And then my nose started burning more and I'm like, holy shit. Like, I am fucked right now. So I started like blowing my nose and try to get whatever I had in my nose out. And then I just went through this just god awful panic for 16 hours.
Ooh, damn.
But I called my friend to come and babysit it, because I was worried about my friends too. We didn't have a sitter, so I wanted somebody sober there. And by the time he got there, you know, I was rolling around in blankets and I was like peeking through the blankets. And I was just like, please just, could you just tell me like a story or just something? And he just started talking about like Transformers and that really helped.
Wow, man. That's like, fucking nuts.
That is... I was like, oh my God. I was terrified. I was like, just tell me the Ninja Turtles story one more time, please. You know, like,
and I can't even honestly imagine, because that's everyone's biggest fear, is getting a good dose of the fear when you're tripping. And that sounds terrible, but that same trip, is that the same one where you had a conversation and something about the wall of hair article from a magazine that was 2 years ahead of, like, you you confirmed with everyone that you had this conversation in 2003, but the article that you saved from the conversation was from 2005.
Yeah, so I had to do a bunch of research.
Time travel in here.
yeah, I had to do a shit ton of research on that. I still have the damn thing too. I know that you're probably going to delete this, but I have the fucking
dude. Article. All right. So I don't post video, but you're showing me a laminated clipping of a picture of Phil fucking Spector. It's titled Wall of Hair. And this is an article that you ripped out during your conversation, during this trip in 2003, but the article is from 2005.
Says it. Yeah, it says it right there.
Yeah, I'm seeing June 16th, 2005, Rolling Stone magazine.
Yeah.
So you somehow, while you were having a very terrible trip, jumped 2 years in the future and got a Rolling Stone article about Phil Spector, and you still have it.
Yeah, when I was writing this book, I lost my fucking mind. Like I had to go and try to figure out.
I mean, this is Back to the Future. This is Marty McFly shit.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't even know. What does it say in the book? What's the conclusion? Cause I wanted to forget about this shit because this is how did I explain it?
Well, you just said that the Mandela effect is real, and I don't know what the Mandela effect is. But
it's basically like Berenstein, you know, the bears, like how do you those comic books,
mm-hmm. The Berenstein, you know, bears.
Yeah. You said it right. It's pronounced Berenstein.
Berenstein.
Yeah. In this reality.
OK.
that's the Mandela effect. It's absolutely terrifying because I remember
you just broke my brain, man.
I don't even like. I had to like when I started doing research and calling my friends and trying to figure out what the fuck these dates were and when this all happened. We pieced it all together, and it just doesn't make any fucking sense.
It happened in 2003. Everyone involved says it was 2003.
Yeah.
And then
I went through this with my friends over weeks and months. And then I even got confirmation from my other friend. He's like, he even went deeper into it because he started thinking about it. He's like, dude, there was a show right after that. And when I looked, it was a Perfect Circle, and a Perfect Circle stopped touring, touring right after that. So like it just doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah, you have some major corroborating evidence in the timeline, you know.
And I can't find the magazine
outside of your personal life.
I can't find the magazine either. I think there is a magazine. This issue is on eBay or something, but I should buy it, I guess, just to have the fucking.
Yeah,
was it June of 2005?
Fucking nuts, man. I mean, that is fucking wild. It reminds me. Maybe it doesn't. It's not. Nah, fuck it. I'm gonna skip that story because it's just not similar enough. Anyway, let's move.
let's move on. regardless, this piece of paper that's in my wallet that I carry around with me at all times.
Any potential robbers out there?
Yeah, it took a lot of bartering, you know, to get it because in the beginning I don't believe that I ripped it out of the magazine. It was my friend. We traded. It was a frenzy of trading, you know, Maxim magazine article little snippets and Rolling Stones shit, and we were all just very obsessed with like whatever we were ripping out, and okay, I'll trade you for this. And I ended up with this one. My friend ended up with the rat bear. You know,
this is all like, it's just like all psychotic psychedelic behavior. Yeah, it's like just imagine walking into this conversation and this trading of articles and the passion behind it, you know.
We had so many like scraps and pictures ripped up. My room looked like it just looked like these guys are on crack.
Like, yeah, it probably looked like my 2-year-old's room, which literally the only time one of my old roommates, I'm not going to mention any names, I came home and he was high on crack in a bad mood and he was passed out on the couch, but the whole house was just destroyed. Shit was everywhere. That's my 2-year-old's room every 30 minutes, like destroyed, shit's everywhere. And I'm like, you know, all right, I understand, you know, and I clean up and, you know, I get it. You're a psycho. I get it.
Yeah. That's where it took us. You know, it took us into this.
But it took you possibly into the fucking future, man.
Yes, I.
Or back to the future, Cody.
I don't know. I don't understand it. It really freaked me out when I. Because I didn't know.
I didn't know that
I wasn't freaked out back then because I had no idea that we traveled to the future like this. So I found that out 2 years ago, like 3 years ago when I was writing, or a year and a half ago when I was writing this book. You know,
when you found out you jumped in the time portal.
That's when supposedly. It sounds like I'm fucking insane, and I might be. Who knows?
well, that's the thing with psychedelics, man. It's. I feel like my experiences with them. When you come down from them, these extreme. Insane sounding experiences that you have are very normal. After, when you come down, you're just like, it all somehow makes sense. And it's kind of not that big of a deal, maybe because you have a greater understanding, or you just look, you're freaking out at the time. But then when you have time to reflect, you're like, you know what? Wasn't that crazy, I guess, because we're all possibly capable of this, or I have a better sense of how I interact with the rest of the world or the universe.
Yeah, it seems to turn on or slow down certain mechanisms that keep us in check and in reality somehow.
Man, go ahead.
Because a lot of DMT people, they'll talk about how all this stuff is interconnected and I've never done DMT. I probably never will. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I guess to me, I'm going to die someday. So supposedly, right.
Right.
I'll die and I'll do it. I think that's the trip. I think that's the final trip.
Right.
So I don't really feel the need to do it, but a lot of people, you know, have those just impactful situations and thought patterns and trips that just take them into whole different lives. And it's immaculate, you know, and it's your body's making it supposedly. So,
right. It just makes you think like, are you making it up or was it already there?
The whole thing, like the universe,
anything, fucking anything. Like, are you tapping into it? Are you creating it? Or are you just like re-entering it? Or, you know what I mean?
That's where, you know, going further, you know, I'm lucky I'm thankful I didn't stop at the AMT. I would say if you probably a standard person, if that was their first trip and somebody said, you know, this is going to be good, here is this stuff and you take it and you have the experience that I had with the 16 hours of terror,
mm-hmm.
they would probably never take a drug again.
I think I would be in that camp.
Yeah, most people would be right there. But I was fortunate to take another leap, you know, and that's where the 2CE comes into.
We must be reading the same notes, Cody, or maybe we're reading from the same book. I don't know. But yeah, 2CE is what you got into next, and it's your personal favorite. Am I wrong?
Yeah, well, I'd say my favorite would be the Foxy. I think that first Foxy would be my favorite. But I only got to do that once. Or I got to do it twice, technically. But it was stored for 3 or 4 years. And
It wasn't as good.
Yeah, the molecules changed. Or maybe it was like stored for like a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember how long, but it was completely different. Now, 2CE was readily available. And it was a carnival ride. I really like just strapped in, and most would say, if you read up on it, most would say it's a very difficult trip. It's one of the more difficult
mm-hmm.
Ones to deal with. Like it's easier to deal with than AMT and stuff like that, but it can be difficult. And I'm dyslexic, so my mind kind of clicks differently. And I think I grabbed onto it and I fucking wrote it, you know?
Yeah.
I wrote it real hard. I wanted to see why is it doing this? You know, why is it so, why are all these so coincident? Why is all these coincidences happen? When mm-hmm. when I take these, and it's not just like what's happening to me, it just seems to be happening externally for some odd reason.
Yeah, that seems to be an effect of psychedelics that really intrigues me. You're either more aware or more open to seeing these coincidences, and you might be crazy or whatever, but you're at least attached to and feeling that it could be anything, an inanimate object, a situation, a person, anything means so much more.
It is. And 2CE basically got me out. Like you give me 2CE and I'm not going to be sitting, you know, like, okay, here's the plan. We're going to take 2CE in my basement or your basement.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the plan, right? No, it's we're gonna end up at the funnest place in the universe. We're gonna be underneath a fucking bridge throwing rocks. We're gonna be doing some fun shit.
Wherever,
and it's gonna happen. Yeah. You don't know what's gonna happen. It's just gonna happen. You know it's gonna happen.
Well, this is the point where is this the drug that you took? That where you came up with the moth to a butterfly.
Yeah, that's when
to tripping.
That's when I started to analyze like how weird these things made you feel in the beginning.
Because this is crucial, because the way that you approach it is very professional, I have to say. Because
thank you.
Yeah, because whenever I do or whenever I did any psychedelics, it's always like, I'm going to do it and I'm going to be drinking the whole time, of course. And I'm going to freak out until it kicks in. And then when it kicks in, I'll probably freak out a little more, but the way that you have a different way of looking at it. And this is moth to a butterfly thing.
Yeah. It's basically how I felt was I'm taking something. One of these, any of these psychedelics, it's going to take time to metabolize in the body. And I felt as if it's just very, very clumsy. Nothing's really making too much sense. It would be very, very hard to drive a car. And I, I wouldn't recommend that at all. Or doing anything important.
Right.
For 2 hours.
Walking, stuff like that.
sitting, standing, thinking.
Don't do any of that shit.
Being yourself, going to the bathroom. Everything seems to be absolutely off. Mm-hmm. So and that's how I envision how a moth is. And so I got it in my head. I was like, okay, with this, it's from a moth to a butterfly. You know, it's basically you're very clumsy, you're ugly, and it fucking, you're just kind of squirming around, and then all of a sudden you are the butterfly, and you're reminded kind of instantly, this is why you did this. You took this for a reason, because I second guess all the way up to that time. I second guess myself, like, oh my fuck, did I take too much? Is mm-hmm. this what they told me it is? Is this the right drug? You know, what's going on? This is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
It's been like that almost every time.
Man. But you at least approach it. Well, I guess the question would be, when you take anything, do you expect the butterfly stage? Do you anticipate it? Is it, do you think it's guaranteed, or is it like, I hope to get there?
you want to hope for it. Yeah. It's definitely not guaranteed, because I've had a few where it just nothing happened. And those are weird too. Like nothing at all. Just a little bit of, but we did have a mystery. None of us really know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I should probably call my buddy and try to drag it out of him, because we were told it was 2CE21, and that was like a time, that was one of those situations where me and my friend, we were just like, okay, we've done 2CE, we're already like doing our thing, and we felt that's when you get kind of cocky, you know, for a second. And we were basically, oh, this new one, and we're going to be the new people doing this, where barely anybody in the world has ever even attempted to do this stuff. So
2CE21.
That's what we thought it was.
Okay.
But there is no 2CE21. We found out.
Okay.
So they're Alexander Shulgin talks about 2CE21 as in this might be able to be synthesized, but as far as I know, I don't really know of anybody that has synthesized it.
Okay.
So we were either lied to, or somebody was confused down the line. Something happened to where we tried something, and I still don't know what it was. It's very possible. I would say it would be possible, because I've went down the list of trying to figure out what the heck it is. There's so many of these. There's 2CT2. There's 2CT21. There's 2TC. 2CT7. And I'm thinking, okay, this is what we did was 2CT21, not 2CE21.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look up how that works, it's a much longer trip, and it's just doesn't have the same characteristics that we.
What are the E's and the T's and stuff mean? I mean, what's the, do you know what the difference is?
They're just letters and numbers, bro.
And that's it. I mean, it's just that simple. It's just,
yeah, there's got to be some kind of meaning, but I don't really.
But they huge, you know, difference.
Yeah, I mean, like 2CI and 2CE are very close, you know. As a matter of fact, that time at the party that I threw a party and I had like around 20 people tripping, that was the first time I did 2CE. But it also, once again, there was just kind of a little bit of sketchy stuff going on kind of in the beginning when this whole thing started, where there was some shenanigans. Mm-hmm. Later on, it was, okay, the word is that half of everybody took 2CI and half of everybody took 2CE without me knowing, and I gave it out to everybody, which is just, it wasn't my fault, but it was on my watch, you know. It mm-hmm. terrifies the hell out of me, because what if right. it was something else? It just happens that they are very, very close. Like one's a little bit more introspective, one's a little bit more visual, you know. Mm-hmm. They're very, very close. So in that sense, it doesn't really matter, but it was a lab rat experience.
Yeah, that's what it all seems to be. And like, what is this stuff the synthetic version of exactly? Like,
so like the 2CEs, 2CI, 2CT, go down the list. Those are phenylethylamines.
Okay.
And those come from cactus. So that's okay. Like mescaline. Mescaline's in peyote. Mescaline's also in San Pedro cactus. And mm-hmm. that is absolutely not only more eco-friendly. I don't recommend anybody do peyote for eco reasons, because it's actually going extinct. Mm-hmm. San Pedro cactus, I want to make sure that if you're going to do mescaline, do it with San Pedro cactus. It has other alkaloids in it to assist the mescaline. Mm-hmm. Regardless, I just had to make sure I said that.
Okay, good.
Because it grows 6 inches a year, and peyote takes what, 10, 15, 20, up to 50 years to produce.
Damn, scare us then.
Yes, and it is going extinct. It is.
No shit, I had no idea.
It is on the chomping block, and it's kind of bizarre that San Pedro cactus is actually legal. It has mescaline in it.
Okay.
Well. Yep, and you could grow. I mean, you could grow. You could get it at Home Depot sometimes.
I'm rubbing my hands together. Yeah. thinking of the possibilities, Cody.
The phenylethylamides are basically a subset of psychedelics, and when you take mescaline, you can change the molecule. So you, without even having mescaline, if you know the skeleton of the mescaline molecule, then you can make all kinds of different psychedelics.
Okay.
So they are synthetically made. They don't exist in nature. They are brand new to the planet, you know, mm-hmm. within right now, you know, 70 years around, you know. And that's all in Alexander Shulgin. I want to make sure that for anybody listening, don't take my word for it. Read TCAL and PCAL, because it explains all of this stuff in better detail than I can. Mm-hmm. So then you go on the mushroom side, and the mushrooms have psilocin and psilocybin in them, and those can be also changed, and DMT can be changed as well. So you kind of got one that you got the vine, you got the mushroom, you got the cactus.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the main derivatives of psychedelics. And then LSD comes I think the I don't know too much about LSD, but it's kind of the same thing. Have you ever heard of ergot?
Mm-mm.
There's you should do a whole thing on ergot. It's basically a mass hallucination back in the medieval days.
Damn. Okay.
Because ergot grows on certain grains, and they were harvesting the grain, and it got into their food supply, and like villages tripped their fucking balls off. And Jesus. it's not all that good, because the molecule is not completely babied and pampered like mm-hmm. LSD. To get it to LSD is the mother of that molecule chain.
Damn.
Don't ask me anymore about it because I don't know anything more.
Yeah, leave me the fuck alone. Yeah, it's like I'm not fucking with any of that shit, man. But it is. It's nice. Thank you for answering that because I always wanted to know. I mean, like, I know these things. I mean, these powders, they're fucking powders, basically.
They're powders and they're like they're crystal. You look inside it, you're like, whoa, that's fucking crazy.
Where
like,
the fuck did this come from?
Yeah. It doesn't look like cocaine. It looks like they vary from like, you know, tints of orange or, you know, a crystal. Like it's you look inside of a Foxy capsule and you kind of see the magic already.
Mm-hmm.
It is magic. It's basically magic in a pill.
I want to get into that too, because you mentioned in your 2CE fervor, chaos magic.
Yes.
You call it chaos magic.
Yeah. Chaos magic. Yeah. I didn't call it that back then, but I can attest to it now.
Yeah. But I love this idea that you came up with and executed at the Bismarck Mall in North Dakota, right?
Yep. So, yep.
Yeah. Bismarck, North Dakota. You guys were on your third day. You intentionally did 3 days straight of 2CE.
Yeah, it was day three for me. And I've never, that's the first time I did continuously.
But that was the plan. It was a planned.
Yeah, it was like kind of situation. Planned. It was like, okay, it just kind of unfolded and, you know, a trip. And then.
But 3 days was like the cutoff. It was like no.
Yeah, my friends were doing that shit all the time.
Right.
You know, some of them didn't ever come down really.
That's the scariest part. That's the one thing. And that's the warning. I mean, everyone gets, I mean, everyone's got like the fucking local story of the guy who had like 100 fucking hits of acid strapped to his back and ran from the cops and sweat. He was sweating and he absorbed too much. And now he thinks he's a glass of orange juice that can't get, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like everybody has that story, that like urban legend in their fucking hometown for some reason.
It's absolutely like, terrifying.
But, you know, that being said, it is real to overdo it with these things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, you've seen it more than I have. I've seen it only a couple of times. But this chaos magic with the deck of cards, beauty side of doing a 3 day binge of,
yeah, it was
of
basically
2CE. Can you explain your experiment? Cause I think it's really cool. And the outcome is really cool.
Yeah. It was, I don't know if it was on day one or day two, where I got the idea. I knew my friends were going to Bismarck, but I didn't really, I was tripping my balls off. So like, I didn't really like understand like if that was really going to happen or whatever. It just, you know, things like people make plans and they don't happen, or things just kind of sporadically happen, you know, just like real life, you know, because it is real life. They were going to Bismarck and I got this idea because we had all these cards. I guess I have to go kind of back a little bit for, let's just say I ended up with a deck of cards with like fucking, you know, hippie sign on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this idea that I'm going to go to the mall with my friends that were not tripping. What one of my friends was, and it was like two not and two that were tripping. And I'm going to dose one more time on day three and just give out these fucking cards to people.
Mm-hmm. Just because randomly give out.
Well, because I had so many
to 52 people.
Yep. Yep. Basically like once they're out, that's it. And if it like, cause I was just starting to just get this image of in my head about how every single thing that you do can affect people,
mm-hmm.
and it could change their life in negatively or positively.
Absolutely.
So even just, and I was going like micro with that. I was thinking, okay, if I go, I'm going to just do this with on a higher magnitude, but just very, it's, I'm just giving them one thing. It's a brief interaction. What are the consequences? I don't know. I don't really know. It could be that somebody, you know, I help, like they don't get in our car accident,
mm-hmm.
because I wasted 1 second of their time handing them a card, or they're like, they think it's funny, or they're just like, oh, that guy's, that gets them angry. Oh, that guy's just a fucking weirdo. God damn it. You know, like,
mm-hmm.
I was okay with taking the brunt end of all of that. I didn't care really if it was good or bad at all. It mm-hmm. was all about changing random people's lives.
Right.
And I walked up to a police officer who, and he had a guy in handcuffs, and, you know, I gave the, you know, I gave the card to the guy in the handcuffs, and I had some sympathy. And, you know, a couple of years later, I'm riding around with my girlfriend's brother. And I was starting to tell the story about this, you know, like I was trying to tell him about how these things interconnected. And he was telling me about all kinds of crazy shit. He was kind of like a meth head, but he somehow like got into writing papers for people without doing any research. So he'd just get paid. He would get paid to just do meth and do homework for people. And he never did any research. Never. It's straight A's.
He's just a good writer, man. He's a good fiction writer.
Yeah, yeah. But he was like, everything, you know, everybody knows everything, and just trying to right. tell me that. And he's all gacked out. Good. I'm just trying to tell him.
Hey, man. Hey, I'm just going to say I kind of agree with him, but continue. Yeah.
But he was gacked out. He was tweaking, you know.
Right.
Anyway, I'm telling him about this, and he starts to just, he's like, oh my God, like I didn't tell him what the fucking card was. I didn't really talk to anybody really about this.
Mm-hmm.
He knew, he's like, that, was it a hippie sign, like a psychedelic color,
mm-hmm.
like on the back? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, dude, I was in a jail cell with that guy for like a year.
The guy you gave the car to in the mall that was getting arrested.
Yeah.
Shared a jail cell with your girlfriend's brother.
Yeah. That guy basically took the card, and it was just like, the guy must have, like, he probably knew I was tripping my balls off, and it just kind of like helped him through his day. And he brought the card back, and it was just like an item that he kept with him. And just so happens that my girlfriend's brother was jail mates with this mm-hmm. guy. So I was just like, holy shit, dude, this is crazy, you know?
Yeah. And he said it actually had a positive influence on him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So your plan worked.
My plan worked. I actually
did. In a sense, yeah. You.
I got to somebody who was down in the dumps. I mean, it was a jail.
Yeah. So. But that's the only one you know about. I mean, there's 51 other motherfuckers out there that you could have had a positive or negative effect on.
Yeah. And it's the capital.
Right. Right. I mean, yeah. Bismarck, baby. But I think about that shit all the time. And it's like that waking life scene where the guy's like, Wiley, I forget his, Wiley the character,
yeah,
that's his name, gets in the boat car and I think Austin, Texas, and you know, he's like, I'll get out here or whatever, and he's indecisive, and the guy's like, you know, just wherever you go, whatever you do is going to determine the rest of your life, you know. And you know, I think about that shit all the time. Every interaction you have, every hang up you have, every conversation you have, everything you forget, like you walk out the door and you forget something, you got to spend 2 seconds to run back in, and you get in your car, you're either avoiding something or you're putting yourself in a situation where something bad is going to happen. It's like every second.
Yeah.
It matters. You are where you are. You know what I mean? It's like, the fuck?
It all matters, you know.
It all matters.
It really does.
But you can't get too wrapped up in that shit, man.
No,
because just think about it. Don't think about it.
Yeah. I like to visit it, but I don't like to stay. You know, it's with a lot of these things. That's it. I like to visit. I don't like to stay.
Yeah. It's tripping, right? That's the thing. It's like.
Or just like thinking about this stuff in general, you know, it's just
temporary insanity, man.
Temporary insanity or sanity, you know,
or knowing too much is, I mean, that's it. It's too much.
Yeah, is it scary to you?
I think it's scary to everyone to be an earthly person with a human earthly brain worried about earthly things. And I know people who are depressed in real life because they can see outside of the bubble of human existence and the structure that they live within. And it brings them down because there's no way out of it. In a physical sense,
I'm there.
It's like the ultimate gravity, you know. It's like
when you get enlightened, it's not fun. Like when you really get enlightened, it kind of fucking sucks.
Knowing too much is a burden sometimes.
That's what. It is a burden. That's why I feel. I'm the happiest, most depressed person that I can think of. You know, I'm terrified of things all the time because they think too deep, you know. Mm-hmm. And if I were to just live my fucking life and just, I guess it's swallow the pill, you know, and mm-hmm. just go through it. It's like the more naive you are, the less is the burden that you have, right?
Right. Yeah,
and I like to go back and forth, you know. I've trained my mind to go in for a little bit, and then I have to, you know, then I just kind of let it go. It's a breathing exercise, really.
Yeah, in and out, inhale, exhale, like stay calm, but also keep learning, but.
Take the waves. They're coming in all the time. Doesn't matter if you're tripping or not. There's always stuff coming in. There's always stuff going out. So that's what I have to remind myself all the time.
Right.
You know, it should be the mantra. It should be, I should expect bad things to happen. You know, I shouldn't be like, oh fuck that. but we're all there, right? We're all there. Mm-hmm. Shitty things happen to everybody, you know.
Absolutely.
Except for a few of my friends that are just
just gliding along on that magic carpet. It's hard to think about, because any situation you get yourself in, good or bad, you think, you know, if I just wouldn't have had to stop to tie my shoe like two days ago.
Yep. Yeah, I got a lot
I wouldn't be getting stabbed right now.
I get a lot of those
shit like that, you know.
You know, fortunate that, you know, nothing too bad has happened, but I think it'll kind of, I'm always on edge, so it'll probably be that way until I, whatever the really bad thing happens, then you die. Maybe that's not that bad though. Maybe that's just the.
Yeah, that one's the thing. It's like I am scared shitless of death, but at the same time, I believe that's not the end. So why am I so afraid? It's just that I feel like I enjoy my life as it is now, and I want to fucking rock it as far as I can, just because I like the way my brain works. So
yeah, well, it does. It does.
I don't want to throw it away, really.
Yeah, yeah.
As I sip my wine.
Self-love. I mean, you should have fun with yourself and your surrounding, because why else are you here? I mean, if you're just angry all the time, like, it should be fun. You should be able to go out and you have to remind yourself, if you're going to get something done, it's just not necessarily fun. It's just you're getting that thing done. It's, you got to make sure you're trying to have fun along right. the way, and interact with life, you know. But I'm not a life coach. I need help myself, you know.
Well, let's get into that, because I think your life story is, it's interesting, because like I said at the beginning, it's like, it sounds like you're a fuck up. Like,
yeah,
based on everything we're talking about, I'm sure someone would listen to it like, man, this guy was a fucked up kid, and he did too many drugs, and he blah blah blah. It was just like not anything I would think is wholesome, or you're not progressing in any sort of way. But the whole time, you were actually, like, you always had you were always an entrepreneur. You owned mm-hmm. a couple businesses during yes. this time.
Yeah. Yeah,
you owned a house during this time, and this is like all before you even left your hometown. Well, you lived in Dickinson and you lived in Taylor, and you were back and forth, and a lot yeah. of bouncing around, typical kind of late teens, early 20s shit. But you actually had, I mean, you were lost, but you at least were driven in your own way, and that has led you to where you are today, you know?
Yeah. It's just looking around, like, now I have, like, I'm on a farm right now. I'm basically trying to grow organically, and I've somehow managed to build up, you know, two multi-million dollar companies. And that's bizarre, you know, cause I was, like, back in the day, I was stoned, and I was thinking, oh, like, let's sell t-shirts on the internet. It's always like that. It's not me. It's like, I wanted to get people, like, what the fuck are we doing? Right. Mm-hmm. The whole time. What are we doing? We need to, it's, I was trying to get out of that town.
Right. That's, you know, the motivation.
Trying to get out of poverty, you know, out of being broke, trying to do that. So I've right off the bat, it was, okay, I'm going to do t-shirts. It was stupid shirts, Z-T-O-O-P-I-D right. shirts. And I spelt shit wrong on accident on my website and reverse engineered Google because of that. and just like found a, it's harder to do whatever I was doing back then. Mm-hmm. But I would misspell things on purpose once I figured I was spelling them wrong.
Right.
And I would get traffic that way because there was no
good business move.
Yeah. Yeah. And because I was dyslexic, I discovered all that stuff, which later assisted me to be able to sell Kratom with my company Herb Stomp, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It helped me move into this next level of entrepreneurship. You know, it's like the t-shirt company wasn't successful, you know, but all of the
stepping stone, man.
Yeah, all the stepping stone, and it was like all those challenges, and listening to the psychedelics, because they were basically, because that's what I do. I sell psychoactive plants,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not a doctor. You know, I always right. have to say that I'm not a licensed practitioner.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but I sell psychoactive plants for a living. that's one of my companies. My other company is a grow light company and a nutrient. We have a nutrient line and a grow light. We sell to the US government now.
And what's that called?
That's the Green Sunshine Company. And the light is the Electric Sky. We have a large amount of the home grow for weed.
Mm-hmm.
We've sold to the government twice. Like, our lights are in Antarctica, and I really do. I don't. This is not to brag, or if it doesn't come true, whatever. I'm going to put it out there. Kids, listen up. This is chaos magic. Our lights are going to be on Mars.
Man. Wouldn't that be something?
Interplanetary. I mean, we're already on every continent.
Right.
And the U.S. government is basically like Antarctica, that those scientists, we don't know what they're doing there, but the Ohio people basically gave us they showed us a picture of what they're doing. It's basically a potato starts with a, they didn't tell us what they're doing, but they showed us, and it looks like a red, like dusty brown red greenhouse, mm-hmm. with our lights like starting potato starts.
Wow.
But I don't know what the Antarctica. So they're two different parts of the government.
Huh.
And we didn't even know that they were ordering from us. It was an email. It was like .gov, and my business partner's like, dude, we just sold to Antarctica.
Man,
and I remember looking into the fucking National Geographic and being obsessed with that base,
mm-hmm.
in Antarctica, and our lights are there. Right now.
I talked about Antarctica with Tamara Rollins. There's so much crazy shit going on there, and it's, who knows what your lights are a part of? Who knows?
Know. They could be just researching it. They could just knock it off, and I mean, obviously we wouldn't send a, there'd be no reason to send our the chassis there. It would just be the LED and the driver, because it's too much weight, you know. But we actually have a commercial and it's gonna be way lighter, but still it would be more of a custom situation where the LEDs are shipped and packaged very, very tightly, mm-hmm. and then they would have to, the scientists on Mars or whatever would have to assemble there.
Dude, but SpaceX.
But SpaceX. Yeah, we're
you're gonna be on.
We joke around this all the time. We're like, when are we gonna like approach Elon Musk? he'll probably find out about us before we want to even do that. It's the company's far larger than I can perceive.
Right. Know? Well, dude. Well, that's fucking amazing, and obviously, congratulations. And we were talking about where you came from and what you're doing now. And yeah, you got your companies, but one thing that I find very interesting and I love, and this is inspiring to all you hopeful entrepreneurs out there, is I love this story of when you moved to Portland and you were starting to grow mushrooms. You had already started to grow mushrooms before you left.
Yeah, I grew in Dickinson. I tried to grow here.
Yeah, but then you had a call center job, and you noticed, you're going to have to say it, what is it, Amanita muscaria?
Yes, yeah.
The mushroom.
The red and white Christmas, It's where Christmas came from. Yeah. Supposedly.
Yeah, because, well, that's also a funny story. The legend of the history of Christmas and these mushrooms making reindeer fly or some shit. What the fuck?
They think that they're flying. They get basically a kind of stumble around, you know, ancient people discovered, okay, like they're doing that. So what if we do it? And then they realize that they have to drink their, well, you don't have to, but to efficiently take Amanita muscarias, you have to urinate and drink your own pee.
Oh shit. Yeah. I mean,
you should talk to Russ. Russ has done it.
Oh my God.
He's actually right. Done that whole thing, the whole thing, but you don't have to, it's just that ibotonic acid. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. I don't pronounce anything correctly, by the way. Ibotonic acid turns to muscimol in your system. And by the way, these are not fun psilocybin, psilocin little blue mushrooms. These are the orange or red large mushrooms, and they're not all that fun. It's a very heavy thing.
Are these the ones that you refer to as like the Mario Brothers?
Yeah. People call it the Mario Brother. It is the Mario Brother. That's the mushroom on there. It's just reversed white to red.
Right.
Because it's red with white dots. I pick those every day at my call center job.
In Portland.
In Portland.
They were just what? On the sidewalk in the grassy median?
There's a little curb and some trees, and there was king bolete there, which are the porcini mushroom, and that's what I was learning how to do, is pick gourmet mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. And this is downtown Portland.
That was Beaverton.
This is in Beaverton.
Yeah.
Okay, so just like southwest a little bit.
Yes. It was just perfect every year. And somebody was telling me about them off season, like, oh, they're growing out there, messing with talking about them or whatever. So I kind of had a plan to get those. And I was planning on coming out here to Oregon from North Dakota to just go to the coast and pick these and then sell them, because I had a market for them. And I got it in my head, okay, I'm just going to dry these in my fucking garage. And I did, and then I traded them for the first stent of my of herb stomp, which is all the ethnobotanicals and plants. I traded for a lot of those first like 10 herbs and spices that helped me come up as a store, because I had more inventory. And also at the same time, I was discovering kratom, and it just blew up from there, you know, locally and not so much online. I mean, we blew up online, but I stopped the growth online because I don't want to be number one kratom guy or kratom. You know? It's just not at all.
No, well,
it's too stressful.
It sounds stressful. I mean, for many reasons, but what I love about this story is these mushrooms that everyone walks by every day, not paying any attention to, just whatever, just fuck it. You look at them and there's opportunity and you pick them. And you used the sale of them after you prepared them to start a company, which is now very successful.
Yes.
So let that be a fucking lesson, folks.
Yeah, it's
just take time to smell the flowers. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it doing all these things have provided me a way to write the book. You know, so that you could, so that people can see it. So it, mm-hmm. it all basically wraps into itself. And it also, it gives me the opportunity to start growing food in the best way I can, you know, in, mm-hmm. in greenhouses and trying to do that, which is the next thing. It's not like a company thing. I'm done with like building up big companies. I want to basically just grow food and somehow integrate it or teach people how to do natural farming now, you know. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's fun. Like it's stressful as fuck, but hey, you know, getting started.
Hey, it's the life you chose, man. We say that in my band all the time. It's like you start to complain a little bit about mm-hmm. whatever. It's the life you chose.
I'm stoked every day. It's
get on
it's,
with it.
Yeah,
you chose that shit. It's it is going to be stressful, but you love it. You know you love it.
Yep. I mean, it's fun. I mean, it's always going to be a challenge because I don't. Once again, I'm going. I didn't know what I was doing when I got into the grow lights at all. You know, my business partner did kind of, but I pushed him in a way that allowed him to do what he needed to do, and he's the guy that comes up with the spectrum, and he knows like every mm-hmm. single thing about how these lights work and where we're getting them and how we get them over here and get them shipped all around the world. I'm just the guy that helps things get started.
Mm-hmm.
And once it's moving, you know, as far as companies go, I don't really want to do I don't want to be the boss. I don't want to.
You're just the shit starter, man.
Yeah. I start the fire. Yeah. Start the fires. And unfortunately some people have to go and pick that up. And Katie, my wife, I'm so sorry for all of, you know, she likes her job and everything, but she takes over like there was, you know, the managerial
right
stuff for Herb Stomp. And
she
and
just Dan. Cleans up your mess. Your successful mess.
Yeah.
you drop a fucking stack of 100s on the floor and you're like, hey honey, can you pick that up for me, please?
But she was a big part in like how that functioned, you know, because I am a very scatterbrained person, so I need people that have their shit together in order to make something work. So it's not just me doing all this stuff. It's like you said, it's the opportunities. It's mm-hmm. the mushrooms on the side of the road could just be like, oh, somebody could just take a picture of it. I think of opportunities a lot and how it can integrate with my life and how maybe it can help people, you know.
Mm-hmm. And this all stems from doing a bunch of synthetic, sketchy ass drugs in Dickinson, North Dakota with you and your fucked up friends.
Yep.
Just
yep.
going for cruises in the countryside. And you know, it just goes to show, man. It's just you know, you're not all hope is lost for all those young folks out there that are drug addled and a little confused. It's not the end of the world. There's still so much to do.
And I don't want to paint the picture that it's somebody could be sitting there and thinking that they're confused and stuff like that. And I don't want to paint the picture that once you get successful, that the confusion goes away. It's still there. I'm still confused mm-hmm. all the time, but it's about managing it in a way, you know, and allowing it to breathe, allowing mm-hmm. it to just move on. And it's okay because everything is chaotic. Everything is.
Right.
It really is.
It really is. I believe you. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. Right. You know,
at least the best things in life are chaotic.
Yeah, man. Yeah. If anything, this is a Psychonauts success story.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I want to make sure that people know that they can do it. You don't have to take psychedelics to do it either.
No.
I think that for certain people, psychedelics could open up the door, and it's up to you to walk through it.
Yeah. This is just your unique path, you know, because mm-hmm. it's just you started off on, I guess, like what would be considered the like dirty end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And then you end up on the clean end of the spectrum in terms of what you're doing and selling and what you're putting into your body right now as to what you were, but how you got there. It's like your story is, man, I actually learned and honed my skills by doing the bad stuff. And by,
yeah,
you know, it's weird. It's weird to say.
Yeah. That's trial and error at its best. Right. Thank God, thank the universe, thank the people that were there. None of us died during that time, you know. And that's part of it, is each one of the companies that I have are a solution to world, to problems, you know. Mm-hmm.
My
friends robbed a pharmacy, for God's sake, right, twice. And then, you know, my counteraction with that is sell kratom and try to help people, even though I can't, you know, make any claims that it really does technically, because I sell it. But you guys are smart enough to do your own research.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's all individual.
It's always to try to help.
Right.
And how can I be successful doing those things? It's the same thing with the lights. It saves energy. So,
right.
That's
helping people, helping the earth. Every little thing helps, man.
Yeah. Hey, can I take a little break?
No, we're done. No. Go for it.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, no worries, man. I kind of needed it too.
I had to go to the bathroom so bad. I was like, oh, fuck, I'm going to piss in this. not dehydrator, but fucking, I was going to piss in something.
you were going to hydrate the dehydrator?
Pretty much. Let's just put it that way, you know.
Well, fuck, man. I was going to wrap it up soon. Anyways, is there anything that I missed? Anything you wanted to talk about that from the book or whatever that we didn't get to real quick?
You know, 2CE is a fucking carnival ride. I know that you were kind of...
I'm all about it.
Yeah. You were mentioning that... Okay, so from what I've written down, you know, it's like not many people have read this, obviously, because it's in editing and stuff like that right now. This is also really cool, because this recording will go and it will help the guy that's like kind of zipping up the book for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, it kind of ties into itself. I don't know when the book's going to be out, but what psychedelic, if me and you were hanging out,
mm-hmm.
and I could say, just based on the book, which one would you do? Which one would you want to trip with me?
Well, I mean, it would have to be Foxy or 2CE.
Yeah, that's those are good choices. I mean, 2C is just, it's basically a carnival ride. It's so bizarre and you can never say it's fun all the time because it's not. Very, very confusing and difficult, but it's like being on a roller coaster.
Well, that's terrifying to me at times. I'm not the biggest fan of roller coasters.
Yeah, me either. It's basically once you get on, you're going. You're on the ride, you know. Henry S. Thompson would say that. It's just buy the ticket, take the ride, you know. It's
yeah. Yeah. You gotta, I guess, as they say, man up and know what you got yourself into and handle your shit if you can, if you're capable.
And yeah, it's fucking hard. So
it's sometimes absolutely impossible.
I want to make sure that if anybody's doing any of this stuff, especially nowadays.
Does it still exist legally, any of this stuff? I mean, shit, I don't know if I should. I mean,
they're analogs. So it's like they've made more complex rulings.
Okay.
From what I understand, like technically, like I think 2C's legal, but not legal. It's because it's part of, they basically started illegalizing the chain of command. They started illegalizing the skeletons. So it's like an analog act. So instead of, we'll just change this molecule over, it's still part of that same chain. So they started illegalizing that way, which it's very complex, but, and it's stupid because there's always going to be new drugs. So that is the problem, especially now, is there's so many new drugs and a lot of people don't know what they're doing.
Scary, man.
And there's a lot of like hardcore evidence of that in particular. You can go to a festival and when they test stuff, it's like they're selling Molly all the time. You know, that's, everybody wants the Molly, everybody wants the ecstasy, and it's usually bath salts.
So
and there's so many different things. So you think you're getting acid and it's 25i, or it's, you know, there's a 25, I don't know, there's a bunch of new ones that I don't even know about. I accidentally almost did one of them one time on top of a mountain playing psychedelic music, you know, rolling through the universe, was playing on top of a fucking mountain. And
oh, you gotta love that. I've done that before.
My friend, it's a Bill in the story in the book. He was there on tour with us and he was like, I was like, hey, we're playing on top of a fucking mountain in San Luis Obispo.
Oh, okay. That's exactly where we played. We played that same mountain. That was great.
Yeah, you did that too? Oh, yeah. My God.
What a wonderful time.
Oh, my God. Was it called Mount Doom or was it a different crowd?
I can't remember what the name of it was. But yeah, we played atop of a mountain in Slow and it was hilariously wonderful. It was great with a Canadian band called Born Bad. And we played a couple days with Born Bad. Shout out.
And then your new band is Born a Lot.
Born a Lot. Well, I mean, we're not new, but yeah, Born a Lot. Yeah.
But it's new to me because I've only seen you guys like once, which is fucking I hope to see you guys again.
Thanks, man. But yeah, we played that same mountain.
Yeah. So Bill in the story, he was in real life on the mountain with us on tour, basically, you know, just coming along for the ride. And he's, it was okay. Take this camera and film us playing on the mountain because this is never going to happen again. And it sure as hell hasn't.
Right.
And then he started saying, okay, take this 25i. You gotta smell it. You gotta, like, you just take a little smell. I'm like, no, I'm playing a show. Like, I can't do that. And he took it and it was basically like it was just basically his feet walking around with the camera, like just confused, like, oh shit, oh, you know, like, so confused. And Jesus Christ, that could have been me
playing like, a show.
Yeah. And I had a really rough time on, we all had a rough time on the mountain. It kicked our fucking ass.
Yeah.
The wind came up and chopped the cord for the electricity. The wind knocked over all of the merch. It went flying into the field. I guess
that merch set up crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. With like a tent, there was like a tent we were sharing with a few other people. Billy Kyle was there.
Oh, Billy. Okay.
And they were the only band that didn't have anything fucked up happening, because they got all their gear and put it on the cymbals because they saw the chaos that happened before. The
chaos magic, not necessarily.
I do want to say one more thing. The sound guy fell off the mountain like three times.
Wait, oh. Sketchy.
When we were about to play, I was like, hey, we need two microphones.
And he
was climbing up the mountain, like,
no.
Like bleeding all over the fucking place.
No.
And he's like,
oh man.
And I'm like, dude, are you all right? And the second question is, I need two mics.
Ah,
like,
yeah.
He's like, hey, could you give me those mics? And I was like, no, I need the mics. I need the microphones.
Do you want any of this 25i or whatever the hell my friend has?
Yeah. Who knows?
You want to smell this as you're climbing up the mountain?
My friend very well could have given it to him. I don't know, but it was literally three times he fell off.
That's fucked up. Our experience on the mountain, Honduran was the band I was in at the time. We went up there and it was just like us and Born Bad. I think there were no local bands, and we were playing and everyone started going nuts, and we're like, yeah. what did we do? We're awesome. And it turned out some like motocross or BMX guy just like busted some crazy trick right behind us, because there was like a ramp right, because there's a bunch of shit to ride up there.
Yeah.
And we didn't know it. And they were going nuts during our show because these people were fucking busting these tricks right behind us. But that made it all the more fun.
Yeah. I know, like, it's always different up there. And, you know, it's a beautiful place. I hope to go there again, or I don't know, hopefully play there again. But
man, Jesus, me too. Christ. I got to play there a couple of years ago on tour with Born a lot. I have a good friend that lives there, Steve X, who's been on the show.
Okay.
Shout out Steve X, San Luis Obispo. But yeah, man, it's been really good having you with me here. I do want to say, now that we're talking about old music and our old bands, we actually did play a show at probably, I guess, the second location of Herb Stomp, your company, there in the Brooklyn neighborhood in Portland, when Honduran and Rolling Through the Universe, your band, played the basement.
Yeah, you played the basement. That was super fun. I was trying to remember. I knew we played with you guys. I didn't know where, and that's where it is. So yeah.
And now look at you. Now look at you.
Yeah. I'm a fucking mess.
But yeah, man, Herb Stomp's been around for a while, but it's grown so much. You got two prime locations. My God, if you know Portland at all, what is it? 39th and Belmont and 80, no, Sandy and 57th?
Sandy and 57th, yeah.
Yeah, you got two of the super sickest prime locations for any businesses in this town right now that aren't downtown.
Corner locations.
Yeah, and crazy. It's just crazy. So I'm very proud of you. Thank you for being here with me.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you need to throw out there besides the book and the band and the business? Anything?
I don't know. The book will be out whenever it feels right. So patience. It's called Somewhere Along the Enchanted Highway. And that is a real highway in North Dakota. I suggest if you ever do go to North Dakota, go down that fucking highway, and hopefully the book will be out before you before you go there.
And if you are going there, maybe the audiobook will be out and you can listen to it.
There's got to be an audiobook because I can't read very well. So,
but speaking of, before I forget, what about Degenerate Life? You had a podcast called Degenerate Life. What's up with that?
Yeah, I think I might move that to the barn. So Degenerate Life podcast on the YouTube.
Not to be confused with this Degenerate Life, which when I Google Degenerate Life,
I got
a
into
podcast
a,
called
yeah, I got into a fucking
this
argument.
Degenerate Life.
Yeah, I got in an argument with those guys because they came in after me and I confronted them. I was like, hey, you guys are actually really close to like what we're doing. And since you're just starting out, I suggest maybe changing your name. And they did not take that lightly. They made a whole episode. They made a whole episode about how much of an asshole I am.
And, oh, wow. So we should all listen to that.
Yeah. Give them the whatever, because Degenerate Life is not going right now. Hopefully it'll spark back up when Jake from Nuke's Hot Sauce, I'm going to shout that out.
That's, Nuke's Hot Sauce. All right.
That was the co-host, N-E-W-K-S. And he got busy with his goddamn hot sauce company, hanging out with me. Now he's successful and he can't even do the podcast anymore. So
soon enough, man.
And the pandemic. It's the pandemic too. It's
pandemic
all
too. Well, when you guys get up and going, I got a lot of spare time, so.
We're gonna have I'll have you on. if Jake doesn't come back on, we'll be doing it in the barn, or we'll be back at Herb's.
If you guys don't want me, I'll just go on this Degenerate Life instead and we'll talk shit about you.
Yeah. and then post rhetoric will cover that, right?
they'll cover it all. Yep.
Yeah. Shout out to those motherfuckers too.
Yeah, JPX, Stuntman Mike, love you guys. All right, Cody.
Yep. Peace out.
It's been fun, man. Thank you again.
Yeah.
All right. Later, man.
Later.
All right. There it is. There it was. My conversation with Cody Kluwen. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned something from it. And I hope you take away the same sense of positivity that I take away from it. It's really is a rags to riches kind of story. I mean, the rags might be ether rags, but it leads to riches nonetheless. Cody's story is pretty awesome and interesting. Can't reiterate enough. Don't go out and do a bunch of fucking drugs thinking you're going to start some businesses and be successful, because it's not going to work out for you. I hate to tell you, but it is good to hear from people who are smart about their drug use and introspective about their drug use, and use it to, I don't know, man, better themselves. It's a weird thing to say. You tear yourself down to build yourself up. But Cody did it, and he's a good dude, and he's doing good stuff. So, yeah, man, good conversation. I'm super stoked he was here tonight, and I'm glad you were here with me. If you have anything to say about it, write me, lostrhetoricpodcast@gmail.com. Find me on Instagram @lostrhetoricpodcast. Say anything. Find Cody's companies, Herb Stomp. That's H-E-R-B-S-T-O-M-P. Two locations in Portland, but you can find them online. And his Green Sunshine Company, you can find online as well. That's thegreensunshineco.com. And check out what he is doing. It's really impressive. So that's it. That's it for the week, everybody. Thank you for being here with me. I really appreciate it. I can't wait to talk to you next week. And until then, please, everyone, stay sane.